And good morning once again, and welcome to the other side of midnight. That kind of magical time between dusk and dawn where the things that we look at in daytime and we say, oh, give me a break, there's no way that could be for real. And we look at during this time of night, when the kind of the drumbeat of the day is faded away into the background and clear thoughts can be heard and registered and revisited. Some of those things we dismiss too casually in daytime take on a whole new light. And this morning we're going to be discussing one of those. The big picture term we're going to be discussing is called nuclear remediation. And the specifics that we're going to talk about a great deal this morning with my guest is Fukushima, a word which has come to stand for something very, very scary and something that no one really seems to know regarding what is really going on. So hopefully we'll get some clarity this morning on that. Before I get to that, I want to point your attention to item number one. If you go to othersideofmidnight.com, click on the upper right-hand corner where it says Radio with Pictures. That takes you to tonight's guest page. And at the top, link number one, is a link to Echo News on the snowstorm, on the record-breaking snowfalls all across the east up to and toward New England, but not getting to New England. It was remarkably localized. I mean, the storm really moved offshore before it could do anything to New England, where I used to live, and we had nor'easters regularly when I was growing up in New England. But weather patterns are changing, and this one was very peculiar. To the west of D.C., in a little place called Reevesville, West Virginia. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, Valerie. One of our listeners sent us an image of the snowfall there in West Virginia. I believe the snowfall totals were something on the order of 40 inches, 42 inches, I heard. If you go to the link number one in Radio with Pictures, that gives you a whole series of measurements all up and down the East Coast. I mean, this was a really major record-breaking storm. And there's a kind of a weird side note out of Washington. We have learned something really interesting in the 21st century because of a mistake made at Reagan National Airport. Apparently, what the Weather Service does, and I did not know this, I should have kind of known this, but I didn't. When they give you these snow totals, like I had Chris Rogers send me an email gleefully saying, snow total just reached 19.5 inches in Central Park. I used to think, and I guess everybody thinks, that they would take a ruler outside in the snow and go boink and read, you know, where the snow was, and that was your snow total by the hour or the half hour or whatever. Turns out no, because snow, if you get it above a certain height, it's kind of logical, it crushes. The lower layers become compacted, you know, compared to the upper layers. Just try, you know, shoveling wet snow back east, and you can really get into the layering idea here. Anyway, so what apparently the Weather Service does is that they put out a board. Yes, a plywood board, and they let it snow on it for an hour, 2 hours, whatever. Then they measure the total. They sweep off the board, and then they measure it again a couple hours later. And that's they add all those totals together, and that's your total snow accumulation corrected for gravity and the crushing of snow crystals and all of that. Well, apparently at Reagan, during the height of the storm, when they were trying to measure the height, they lost the snowboard. It got buried in a snowdrift somewhere at Reagan. So they've estimated from other measurements about 17 and a half inches at Reagan. And of course, you know, in Washington and around Washington, there were 29 inches and 30 inches. And I said out in West Virginia, it was 30s and 40s. And so this is an interesting thing. In the history books, in the record books, we will never know the actual official snow total for Washington, D.C., for Reagan National Airport, where the total board was kept, because they lost the board. I mean, this is classic. Oh, I hate to say this. This is so classic government. Anyway, my guest this morning is going to be talking about classic government and how we can maybe get corrections so that when it's not just snow totals, but actually our very life and survival on planet Earth, we might do a bit better. My guest this morning is Dennis Watts, who is founder and president of Rejuvenation Research and Development. It is his purpose through this organization to understand the roots of consciousness, energy, and nutrition as it relates to the body, mind, and spirit. And Dennis has a strong belief that success and enjoyment of life stems from the maintenance of health and homeostasis in life. Dennis' background is, he has an engineering degree, two of them, in fact, from Howard University and the University of the District of Columbia. He's been working on a master's systems engineer scientist for various aerospace and engineering corporations for 25-plus years. Dennis also has experiences that range from program manager to project engineering and project planning. He has worked in the field of electrical and electronic and advanced spacecraft systems engineering. He's worked at prestigious Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland, in the Space Communications Department at Boeing, in the Advanced Works at Advanced Systems for the Phantom Works Division, at Northrop Electronic Systems Division, and many others. With this remarkably interesting hard science background, what we're going to talk about tonight, to some who may not be familiar with what we talk about on the show, might seem a bit of a stretch. But remember, it's the other side of midnight, and we are going to be talking, among other things, about how the torsion field can be used to remediate nuclear radiation. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Oh, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you five by, as I used to say.
All right. Excellent. Fantastic. Thank you so much for inviting.
Well, thank you for being our guest.
On your show.
Thank you very much for agreeing to do this morning. Before we swing into the heart of this really amazing problem we have called Fukushima, let me back up a little bit and kind of ask about you. How did you go from a hard science engineering background working for aerospace to realizing that some of the major engineering problems of our time, like remediation of nuclear radiation, on which civilization is really now very dependent, has been falling so far behind other aerospace developments?
Well, I guess you have to look at from the standpoint of understanding what my true passion is. Now, of course, yes, I build spacecraft and manage spacecraft construction over the years, working on the space shuttle program for many years, working on the International Space Station for many years. My real passion all that time was health and healing. And it just advanced not only from healing the mind, body, and spirit complex, but also going into healing the earth itself. Because all the research I found showed that true health comes from a healthy earth. And if the earth is upset and out of balance, it is extremely difficult, no matter how many organic foods and raw vegan foods and vitamins you take, you cannot maintain your health if the planet itself is radiating a frequency that doesn't support your creation. So my passion just switched over very, very calmly and easily to finding out how to balance my environment, how to work in concert with creation, and to then just move into the idea of what does it take for my air, my soil, my water, and all aspects of creation to support life itself. And since I have these beautiful grandchildren, I cannot imagine them growing into a world where we have a background radiation field that is not going to support life to the fullest extent. It's a cumulative process over time. And as a result, radiation has the ability to just simply melt the fabric of creation itself. And what we want to do is to remediate that process. And that's what I was hoping I could share with you and your audience to give an idea that I have, through my research, identified some of the solution sets.
Okay.
And
I'll tell you what,
that's
Dennis,
what we want to talk about.
Yeah, we definitely do want to talk about remediation, because nobody is talking about remediation. And I happen to know there's a physics that exists which makes remediation possible. So we're going to have some fun. But let me do this. Let me try calling you back right away, because you have a very bad connection. There's a lot of noise on the line. So let me try to clean that up, okay? So stand by. I'll call you right back.
Okay.
And I'm sorry about that. See, you can see when I disconnected that his line for some reason does have a lot of noise on it. So let's see if we can quickly go and find him again. This is really intriguing because this conversation about nuclear wastes basically in the mainstream falls into two basic categories. One is that you can't have any nukes because you will have radiation. And the other is if you have nukes, you have radiation, and therefore you have to bury the nuclear waste because there's nothing else that can be done. Well, as I believe Dennis is going to be talking about in a few minutes, there are other options. So let's see if we can get him back here. One ringy dingy.
Hello, Dennis.
Ah, okay, that seems a little better. Yeah, there's still a weird rippling hiss and noise, but it is better. So, all right, so you went into engineering basically to make a difference.
That's what I did, absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's taken, all of those aerospace companies, 25 years. Now, working on the space program is unquestionably making a difference, except I can't remember the last time a nuclear engineer or an aerospace engineer or a spacecraft reentry systems engineer said to me, you know, we really got to worry about the consciousness of the spacecraft. So how did you put that on hold until you were able to create this institution where you're trying to tackle some of these problems by using a consciousness approach?
Well, I mean, my background right now, as I said, because I'm retired from the field right now, and my background is quantum physics. That's where my passion is. I want to understand how creation works. And in the process of answering the question, how does creation work, and studying some of the finest minds on the planet and what they have come up with over the years, and looking at the math and looking at the science that they've concluded with, it turns out that the universe itself is one gigantic living being, and that everything within the universe is a fractal holographic subdivision of this gigantic being, which means that a galaxy contains everything that the universe has as far as information. And that includes the suns in that galaxy. And it also includes the planets in that are going around that sun. It also is a fractal holographic. And that means all the life on that planet also is what I call fractal holographic individualized aspects of this one being.
Okay, Let me please stop you there because I have a question. That universe, mm-hmm. let's assume your axiom is accurate, that the universe is a conscious being. Why is part of the universe at war with another part of the universe going all the way down to the microscopic level on this planet? And obviously, from work and research that our audience is familiar with, extending far beyond this one planet. Why are we fractionated if we're in fact all one?
We're fractionated because we don't understand the oneness. We're in a paradigm of separation, and it's always us against them. And we've been programmed that way for the last many thousand years, I should say. Mm-hmm. And that's the unfortunate part. What we want to do is to understand unity consciousness now. That is what's most important for us to advance as a civilization. It was to the advantage of the, as I call it, the Luciferian experiment in order to gain control and to isolate us from the rest of creation. That was a necessary part of the plan, was to create this thing separation.
Hang on. Let's back up then, because obviously people need mm-hmm. to kind of understand your cosmology. Where are you coming from? What's the big picture? And how did this separation and fractionation occur? In other words, I think you got to start at the beginning.
That's going to be your whole show.
Well, speed it up, okay?
Well, like I said, in my cosmology, the one that I've been studying and understanding is that we were basically taken over by a group of beings that are in the opinion that they are separate from source. They don't need source. Okay. You can go off and do your thing. You leave us alone and let us do our thing here. And that's where we got trapped. And this beautiful planet has been under that kind of control for a long, long time, thousands and thousands of years. And what we want to do, and that's what the whole planet is going through now, is to try to erase or to remove that kind of influence from the planet as we speak. And I think that is happening, finally. And we as a humanity on this planet, a civilization on this planet, can then move into what I call become true members of the galactic community.
So, right now, so as an engineer, Dennis, are you saying that technical solutions, like let's talk about just a bit about Fukushima. We have a huge radiation leak at Fukushima, and there's potential technical ways to solve that. Are you saying that applying these technical solutions alone to any of the multiple problems all over the world, as an engineer, is not sufficient until and unless we include the consciousness component of how we got into the mess?
You got that right. You understanding me completely, because this is a problem that is impacting the whole planet. It's not just something happening in Japan. All of the United States, all of Europe, all of Africa, all of Australia, New Zealand, and South America have to get involved with this project in order for it to be successful.
Okay.
Because of the fact.
Let us then give people a sense of the problem, because Fukushima to me is probably the number one undiscussed issue on the planet tonight.
Yes.
For some reason, the Western press don't seem to want to talk about any of the details. The Japanese, likewise, the only information we're getting is coming in bits and pieces and leaks, and you can't trust the leaks, and you look at different leaks, and they tell you different things. So it's a real mess. So why don't you start at the very beginning? We've got about 15 minutes until the bottom of the hour, a little less, to give people a context for what do we mean when we say Fukushima? What happened and when at Fukushima that should get us all very concerned?
Well, let's just go back to the beginning. Is this happening in March of 2011? There was a gigantic tsunami that caused a major problem at the Fukushima site and a couple of other sites along the coast as well. And but Fukushima got the brunt of it. And what happened was that the nuclear power plants there were, the engineers were unable to shut them down properly. And as a result, the coriums in the 1, 2, and 3.
Wait a minute. What is a corium and how do you spell it?
A corium is the fuel rods.
Okay.
And the corium, basically, when the they had no way of cooling these coriums any properly, they went into a meltdown condition.
In the reactors
These were in the reactors.
Okay.
In the steel containment.
Didn't they also have spent fuel rods stored on site?
Yes, they did. They have probably about 647 tons of fuel rods on that site.
God.
So it is a big, gigantic problem for them to take and try to control all of that, especially whenever they lost power. And that's kind of like what happened. They just got overwhelmed with the problem. And that's why right now it's a felony to talk about this over in Japan.
You mean the Japanese parliament passed a law, was signed into law by the president or whatever, that actually can't in Japan talk about Fukushima?
Right. Their news people, their scientists, their engineers cannot discuss that.
Why did the politicians agree to this?
You said, why did they agree to this?
Yeah.
I have no idea other than speculation. And that was because they were ordered by those most high in authority in the industry.
Okay.
And they want to...
But don't they have constituents? Don't they have constituents who watch television? Don't they know there's a problem? Don't they know it hasn't gone away? You can't wave a wand?
Absolutely. They know it's a problem. But they don't want us, the general population, to know there's a problem. And it appears to me that there is some semblance of cooperation based on the evidence that is present now. Like, for instance, The EPA are supposed to be monitoring the background radiation all across the United States, but for some odd reason, they shut down the radiation network. They call it the RadNet. And when I tried to find out, why would you do such a thing? And when I do the research, it turns out, oh, we shut it down because the cell towers appear to be interfering with the transmissions and the communications. So since we don't have a solution for that, we'll just shut it off.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
None,
to me
zero.
Either, but that's their excuse. And to me, it just sounded like that's what they're going to use and hope that we buy it. But, you know, me being technically involved and technically competent, I certainly did not buy it. But
so wait, let me understand this. The EPA, which is commissioned by law, by Congress, going back to the Nixon administration back in 1971, I believe, to basically look at our air, our water, protect our health, look at toxins, look at, you know, microorganisms, look at all kinds of environmental toxicity. It had a radiation network to cover the continental United States in operation up until when, after Fukushima, it suddenly shut it down because it said it's getting communications interference from cell towers?
Cell phone towers. That's their excuse.
Well, has anybody
made no sense to me.
Have you called your representative, your senator, your congressman, and said, what the hell is this? I'm paying the EPA to keep me safe. Why aren't they keeping me safe?
I didn't call them. I called and communicated with the White House directly to figure out what can we do. Here is a set of solutions I have. Can you help me get them implemented? Because I'm going to need to get access to the Department of Defense. They have some space-based platforms that I want to get access to. I know they exist. I want to get access to them so that we can use them to find the edges of this problem so that we don't put people in danger when we're trying to resolve it.
So also, you took this opportunity with the announcement, and I haven't seen it. If you could provide a link, it might be useful for the EPA shutting down the RAD network. But you used that announcement as a reason to write the White House a synoptic vision as an engineer how you could tackle Fukushima and its related problems. Well, roughly when was this?
Well, I did this way back. I did it when it first happened way back in 2011. I knew there was a major problem then. But I went directly to the Department of Defense, the Joint Chiefs.
Right.
I found connections, got connections, and went to, I think his name was Mullen at the time, was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I explained what I would need, what we would need in order to get this problem resolved before it incorporates itself into the ecology of the planet.
Okay.
And I explained to them what I felt at that time was going to be the major challenges that we were up against.
Okay,
but
in the time we have remaining to the bottom of the hour, show us and demonstrate to us what you showed them. What is the problem we're dealing with when we say Fukushima? How serious, how bad is it?
Well, when the coriums melted, they went through the first containment, the second containment, went into the earth, down into the water table, and out into the ocean proper. And there, they are poisoning the Pacific Ocean basin.
Okay.
And therefore, we have a constant source of radiation and radionuclides moving into the Pacific Ocean basin, poisoning that whole ecosystem.
Now, if there's hang on. If there's a news blackout imposed by the Japanese on their engineers, on the, I forget what the corporation is that ran this, TEPCO, was that the name of the?
Yeah, TEPCO, and they're journalists, of course.
Okay.
Can't talk about it either.
How do we know anything if there's a blackout? Where's your source of information, and how reliable is it?
Well, I've been getting pictures, and there are people that are monitoring it, and there are scientists that are doing monitoring work, and I collect their information, study their information in order to try to keep abreast as to what's going on.
So this is kind of like the Fukushima Underground?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Using social media and
things of that sort.
Okay.
Absolutely. There are people that are following this to the nth degree, And to that degree, I try to keep abreast so that I can keep my solution set as current as possible.
Okay. Now, as an engineer,
I'm still going to need to do an engineering survey once we get the okay to go in and get this thing resolved.
Okay.
That's still going to be a necessary thing. And like I said, there are space-based platforms and satellite platforms that allow me to take thermographs of the ocean, of the site, so that we can understand where the edges are, and then we can start to apply our technology in a manner
Just between you and me and the few, I don't know how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of folks who listen to us every morning mm-hmm. all over the world, don't you think that our DOD has already done that? Don't you think that you really want access to the records from the incident occurring through now to see how the problem has evolved? But don't you think the United States of America, the Department of Defense, would want to know when the most dangerous leak of radiation into the atmosphere since World War II occurred? Don't you think they would have wanted to track that with all those assets, and all we have to do is find the data?
I would think that, but that hasn't been my... I haven't seen evidence of that to this day. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, and it may have, and I'm not aware of it. That is possible. But I haven't seen the evidence to show me that anybody's doing anything along those lines. And the reason, of course, is because I'm seeing so much devastation along the coast of Alaska, Canada, the United States, and Mexico.
See, this is very curious, Dennis. This really bothers me because we do live in a kind of a free pluralistic society, even though there are lots and lots of controls. There's so many leaks, that's why we're not all living, you know, like Orwell. I would think with the activists concerned, with people up and down the west coast of the United States really concerned, with the level of technology of communications, with the ability to take radiation readings anywhere, anytime, with stuff that basically is trivial to buy compared to what we used to have to do in the way of Geiger counters and all that, that there'd be a flood of information all over the internet, regardless of the official censorship, just because people's lives are at stake, and people really don't want to not live in knowing when not knowing can kill you.
You got that right. And people are taking measurements all across the United States, and the background radiation is ridiculously high. And that's part of the presentation that I gave you to look at, to show you how some people have been looking at what's going on in the various cities around the country. Like if you look at Spokane, Washington, you'll see that they were measuring in that city like 1,585 counts per minute.
Okay. Do we have a link on your items tonight under Radio with Pictures that shows some of this?
Yeah. You can go to WTSenate.info.
Now wait. Have you looked at the Other Side of Midnight page tonight? Your page. We have three links up there. We have the remediation proposal for Fukushima, which is yours, I guess. We have right. The Fukushima NPP Remediation Project Team Executive Summary. Then we have a Nexus news item from 1/21/16, a few days ago. But we don't have a link to a national map of radiation unless it's buried in one of those links or it's on your website. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. But if you look at that page, the number one, where it says remediation proposal for Fukushima.
Okay, so we click on that, okay.
Yeah, and if you were to go to and look at...
It's loading slowly.
Slowly.
Well, you know, it's the internet. What can I tell you? You know, depending upon where you are. Okay, I see it here. We're coming down to the bottom of the hour, so we're going to click on this, and what diagram should I be looking at?
If you go to page 39, where it says radiation comparison city size.
Okay, there I am.
City and state.
There we are. And okay.
And that's by Bob Nicholas. And you'll see a list of the major cities across the United States. And it kind of gives you an idea of what the background radiation in all those various cities.
Okay, excellent. This is from Bob Nichols on December 5, 2015. Measure between November 28th and December 5th. Normal background radiation, and then the highest recorded levels in the U.S., Spokane, Miami, Bakersfield. Yes, that's an excellent list. Okay, so everybody hold it there. Everybody go and kind of look at this list. Othersideofmidnight.com, click on Dennis's first link. Go down to page 39. 39, twice 19.5.
Right, and if you want a slight blow up, you can go to page 40, because that's where everything
Excellent.
Is, but I broke it up,
Excellent.
So it'll be a little bit easier to read on page 40 and 41.
Super, so hold it there. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is Dennis Watts. We're discussing Fukushima and what could be done. This is Bobby Bright to take us out at the bottom of the hour. We shall return. Dennis back. We tried reconnecting in that break so that we might have a little better connection. Dennis, please continue.
Okay, well, if everybody's looking at that chart that I'm showing here, and these were measurements that were taken between the November 28th, 2015 to December 5th. And if you can see there, that in Spokane, Washington, it was like 1,585 clicks per counts per minute. And
right.
That's like 317 times normal. And normal background radiation is somewhere between 5 to maybe 20 clicks on a high day.
Right.
And you can see that that reading is in the danger zone. And that's in Spokane. But the thing that's interesting to me is, if you go to Miami on the other side, that's 1506. That's 301 clicks. And if you go down the list, and I was looking around where in my area, like San Diego, Anaheim, Riverside, and I'm like 222, 210, 206 times normal. And that's going to be causing problems as that if that kind of background radiation is in our environment. And
okay,
so
this is a snapshot for a few days ago, maybe a month ago, okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What's happening is, what's the trend curve? Is it getting better or worse?
Well, it goes up and down, but I'm not going to say all of this is Fukushima, because the way I see and the way I've been understanding all of this radiation, like all the nuclear power plants that we have in the United States that are over 10 years old, are probably spewing radiation into our environment.
Yeah, but wait. You can't base a scientific estimate on probably. Do we know about leaks or don't we know? Because leaks are incredibly...
Well, down because of leaks, like San Onofre here in the California area, going down towards San Diego, between L.A. and San Diego. San Onofre was shut down because it was leaking. Okay, and that is what I'm saying is that radiation will always find a way to get out of containment. And what I'm saying is after 10 years, there is something called the Wigner effect. And the Wigner effect causes embrittlement of metal, of concrete, of glass, and other materials. And it just causes things to break down. And that's what I believe most of the engineers and scientists in the field are not completely aware of. And if your system is over 10 years old and you haven't upgraded it in some way, shape, or form, there is a high-level probability that it is leaking radiation into the environment. And
Wait a minute, Dennis. I mean, nuclear effects, neutron effects on steels and... You know, the high-temperature alloys that are used in nuclear reactors are well-known and well-discussed, you know, brittleization and the leakage of small molecules and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So why would you say that they're not aware of it? It seems to me it's much, much easier to say that it's just too expensive to replace all that plumbing, so they just kind of cross their fingers and pray.
Yes, that's what's going on. That's what I believe is going on. And I'm saying...
But it's not because of ignorance. It's because they know and they can't tell us because they can't afford to replace the pipes.
Yes, and I agree.
Okay.
But like I'm saying, I'm thinking that these high numbers are not all Fukushima.
Ah.
I'm thinking that these high numbers are because of the weapons plants here and there, the nuclear power plants here and there. We got like 114, I think, in the United States alone. And they just seem to emit radiation slowly into the environment. And I'll be willing to bet again that that's where a lot of these diabetes issues, you know, people with lung cancer that don't even smoke, those kind of issues, people that are healthy and doing the right thing for their life, and suddenly they have a major medical event or crisis of cancer coming into their life.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that this is the reason why those kinds of things are happening, because radiation is not something you're going to taste or smell or sense. It's just something that's there, and it's melting the fabric of creation, and unknowingly, and all of a sudden, you are going to be having issues.
Okay,
health issues.
All right. We need some numbers in the conversation. How much radiation is Fukushima producing? How
right
much is
now,
leaking? Hang on a sec. Let me ask the second part. How right. much is then leaking of that into the Pacific Ocean? Third part, how big is the Pacific Ocean and how diluted is that radiation, both in terms of time, because some of the isotopes are short-lived isotopes, others are much longer, and in terms of their ability to flow through ocean currents and get distributed through the ecosystem. So in terms of how much actually is winding up in the atmosphere over the United States now from Fukushima, how much of the dilution of the huge amount of atmosphere and water between us and Fukushima is in effect, and should we not be looking at exact numbers as opposed to just general ideas that it's very scary?
Right. Now, the understanding is that there is close to 300 tons of radioactive wastewater moving into the ocean on a daily basis from Fukushima as we speak right now. And this has been going on for some years. So we have, like, what they call terabecquerels of energy moving across the ocean that is reaching the coastlines.
Now, you just used the term terabecquerels, or is that the number of...
That is a huge number of radioactive decayed particles moving and mixing into the waters of the Pacific Ocean. Now,
okay,
I know
can you give us an idea of how huge it is? Because, again, unless you talk in specifics, it just is kind of ghostly and scary.
Yes, it is ghostly and scary. But the bottom line is, if we can get our solutions in place, we believe we have enough technology to start the process of remediation and turning this upside down and putting the earth back in order again. We believe that that is possible. So I don't want people to run off with their hair on fire. I want them to just back us and be the roots, as we saw, the baseline for helping us to let our authorities know that we know, and to support us in getting the problem solved.
Okay.
That's what we really want.
That's what we're really talking about.
I'm not here to terrorize people with what this is, because it is an ugly problem just talking about it.
But according to your background, it is soluble, okay? It can
yes.
be solved, provided you can bring
yes.
the right number of people and the right agencies and the right governments all together to solve it.
Yes.
Okay,
first
question. Since it's such a threat to Japan to start with, why aren't there people already doing this?
That is the question I've been trying to get answered myself. It doesn't make sense that you would want to poison your whole country. It doesn't make sense.
And Japan is not a very large country, so what would be a serious but controllable issue here in the United States for the small island of Japan? I mean, literally the entire island of Japan has been affected by this, right?
Yes, it has.
So how can they be ignoring...
And all the way down to Tokyo, they have been making measurements of the soil in the city of Tokyo, and they were getting like 7,000 becquerels.
But
that's
about 7,000 disintegrations
in an hour.
But Dennis, if everything is secret, how do we know?
Well, that was given to us by Arnie Gunderson, who has been over there, and he actually took the measurements and he brought it back and put the information up on the internet.
And who is Arnie Gunderson?
Right. He's part of, I think it's called West Winds. But the bottom line is he's like a consultant for the nuclear industry.
Okay.
And he's been over there actually taking measurements. He took a shoe of a child's tennis shoe and measured the radiation coming off, and it was around 4,000 becquerels.
Now, what does that mean 4,000, in terms of...
That's how many disintegrations in an hour.
And what does that mean biologically?
That's enough to create extreme illness in that physical or biological system or the body.
And how does that relate to other? How does that relate to other radiation measurements like the Curie or the Rankine or?
Or sieverts,
yeah,
or things of that sort. And I like to just use the how many counts are you feeling per minute. But those were the measurement units that I guess his equipment was.
Okay, well, I would presume that 4,000 to 7,000 counts per minute with a handheld device on a kid's shoe would freak out a lot of Japanese. So why aren't they freaking out all over the web? How can someone keep this a secret?
I have no idea how that is done.
I mean, look what's going on. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting, but I'm looking at Flint. You know, I mean, well, these tend to be kind of heated issues. We're talking about,
yes,
you know, life, limb, and property, and in this country, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So,
and the pursuit of happiness.
Look at what's going on. Look at what's going on in Flint. Yes, it took a while to get Flint people and activists and networks and all that involved, but now there's everybody's covering Flint. There are 6,000 kids in Flint who have lead poisoning. Well, we now know because of all the coverage, there are 6,000 kids in Flint, period, under the age of six, which was the population they were studying. The point is we know everything now about lead in Flint. We still know almost nothing. In a so-called democracy at the gate of Asia, we know nothing in an incredibly technological society with social devices coming out of the wazoo. We are not getting any ground truth around the blockade, the censorship, whatever. It's like some huge iron curtain had descended around the concept of Fukushima, and no one's freaking out at 7,000 disintegrations per minute.
I have no idea other than the fact that they have made it a felony to discuss it in public forums. So the journalists can't talk about it without fear of incarceration. And I guess you can say the TEPCO authorities can't talk about it without that same fear. And as a result, it stays quiet on that level. Now, I happened to watch a YouTube where there was like a public meeting in Fukushima, and the farmers were talking to, I guess you can say, the city administrators in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And this farmer was almost in tears because he was talking about how he's growing rice. He knows this rice is contaminated with cesium, and yet he is selling it, and he feels extremely guilty about it. And they have raised the limits of allowable radiation in that rice to somewhere like 100 counts per minute, something like that. And that's way too high. They said, I wouldn't feed this to my kids. And people are buying this stuff thinking that it's okay because they can't tell them what it really is. And they say the farmers know what it is. And he's practically in tears explaining this to the authorities. And basically, they were just saying these were rumors.
Right.
The rumors are rebutting back, saying it's just rumors, and they were ready to go into a riot because they couldn't believe that these authorities, so to speak, figures were demeaning and putting down the information and not really addressing it properly. And they were just complaining left, right, and center. So I saw that, and you know, my heart was going out to them big time as to what they're experiencing. And so life is extremely difficult for them, knowing that they're living in a radioactive environment, their food is highly contaminated, and what do I do? How can I manage this? And they're not getting the proper support to deal with this issue and this problem. And like I said, that's why we want to, on the website, on WTSENATES.info. That's WTSENATES.info, INFO. And you click on the Nexus button, and you'll see a petition. And if you can sign that petition, this is what we want to give to the White House. This is what we want to give to the UN Security Council. This is what we want to give to Abe Shinzo in Japan, the Prime Minister, and hopefully we can even get it to the Emperor of Japan to let them know that solutions are there. We don't have to necessarily put it in the newspaper, but allow us to come in and begin the process of doing the engineering surveys to find out where the edges of this problem is, so that we can start to put in the technology and start the remediation process.
Okay, so is that petition in the Nexus News link?
Yes, it's in that on the website I just gave.
Okay,
that's the WTSENATES.info. That's WTSENATES.info, and /Nexus. That's NEXXUS. And that will get you to that. And you just click on Fukushima, and that will get you to the executive summary I put together so people can see what it's going to take to get us started. It is not, I repeat, not the final cost. This is to get us started to do the engineering surveys and things of that sort so that we can define how big this problem really is and to get the people and equipment and to get all the various countries around the world involved as far as organizing the resources needed to get this problem resolved.
Okay, so we've got about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. Why don't you start by giving us an overview of how your remediation project would work? You say that it has to start with a survey to know the depths of the problem. Can you give us an estimate of how big the problem is?
Well, if you look at some of the pictures in the proposal that I have, you can see
this is link number
gigantic.
One.
Right, link number one. And if you look at, I think it's page, let's see if I can find it real quick for you. Yeah, if you look at page 21, you get an idea of how huge the debris pile is. That's just one pile. There are many, many others like that. Oh, all of that needs to be remediated. Now, if you look at page 20,
when you say remediated, the current state of the art for remediating nuclear waste is to basically take it somewhere and bury it and hope nobody runs into it for 100,000, 200,000 years, right?
That's the way it used to be. Now, the technology I'm offering is something called the Nuclear Remediation Mineral Blend. This was designed by a company called Arna Scientific Trust out of Mumbai. And it's run by a beautifully minded person I call Mr. Shastri. He's an industrial chemist.
Okay.
And he has, in essence,
Peter Shastri is his name, right?
That's what we call him, yes. He's the Peter Shastri. He is a beautiful-minded person that is gifted on levels that you can't imagine for solving really hard problems.
These are astonishing results. He was given permission to take water from Fukushima and test it in his laboratory, and he was able to neutralize the radioactive isotopes within 72 hours, according to this report.
Yes. You got it. You understand. And that's on page 18 where I kind of explain what is going on. Now, they only did the test for about 33 hours, but you can see it went from 107 millirads per hour down to 43 within 33 hours.
So this is on page 19 following the statements on page 18.
Yes. Okay. Right. The actual test data is on 19.
And this is on link number one of your links tonight, the Nexus Environmental Survey, showing how the remediation plan would work for Fukushima, right?
Right. And right. Yes.
So, okay, here's the big question.
Dennis,
here's the big question. How is Peter Shastri neutralizing radioactive isotopes within 72 hours?
Now, that, of course, is a proprietary process for Argonne Scientific Trust, but the bottom line is he has identified a combination of minerals that whenever you soak your radioactive byproducts in it for that long, when it comes out, it's inert. It's no longer radioactive, and it can be used back in industry, or it can be turned back into the earth with no hurt, harm, or danger to the planet. That is one of the solutions we have. The other solution we have at our disposal are something we call extremophiles. Now, these are little tiny nano microbes that have the ability to exist in the presence of radiation without being destroyed, and they actually consume the radioactive nuclides. And they are able to, and that's what we want to use on the actual reactors where the corium's actually melted, so that they can go in and actually consume the pathway in which the corium went into the earth all the way out to the ocean. And they are asexual, I guess you could say. They multiply themselves by a process called binary fission.
Right.
And they are RNA-based, not DNA-based. And therefore, they actually go in and heal the earth and to consume the radiation at the same time.
Okay, now, wait. There is a phenomenon that most of the people, I think, might have heard of it, called biological transmutation, where radioactive substances in a given organism, either a plant or, you know, I think it's mostly microbes and plants that they've used for this, are somehow able to take a given dose of radiation and to transmute it, to actually reduce or eliminate the radiation by transmuting the radioactive materials, the isotopes, into a non-radioactive isotope.
That's what we're talking about.
You're saying that these microbes are able to conduct biological transmutation in the field if you basically turn them loose and let them eat the stuff at Fukushima.
You understand me, yes. That's the other solution set that we have access to that we want to implement, and that is what we want to use on the destroyed reactor buildings so that they can be properly decommissioned. Otherwise, right now, they measure something in the neighborhood of 9 sieverts of energy radiating out of those buildings. So
which
no
means
one can
what?
Go near them, which means they can't go near them by any normal biological system can't go near it because you'll be dead in 1 hour.
Okay.
If you get touched by that level of energy. So the microbes, we need to quiet it. And I'm in touch with another beautiful mind.
Hang on. Before we change subject here, you say there are microbes that can remediate nuclear radiation through biological transmutation, which is, by the way, very controversial. The science on that is all over the map, and there's incredible pushback. But let's assume again for the moment that this works. Where can we find work that these microbes have done to remediate other sources of radiation?
Where can we find work? Well, there's
references, papers, documents.
You can go to the University of Missouri, and you can talk to Professor Judy Wall, and she's working on that herself there at that particular institution.
Okay.
And she's doing some work, I guess you could say, along the lines of actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think she is trying to, what do you call it, genetically modify them so that they can exist in even higher level extreme environments. Higher temperatures is what they are trying to get into so that they can still survive and do this kind of work.
Right. But and, I mean, this is Dr. Judy Wall, right?
Yes.
At the University of Missouri. In St. Louis?
Yes.
Okay, so if you Google Dr. Judy Wall, you'll find her there, right?
Yeah, and you can also find some of the... I did make a mention of her on page 13 in that proposal.
Okay, good. I'm going to go back to page 13 because here's my next question. does she understand that this, according to mainstream science, is impossible? You know, biological transmutation is not accepted by the mainstream scientific community. So if she's actually working on a project, and I wonder who is funding it, says uranium-eating bacteria, University of Missouri, Columbia, Professor Judy Wall, University of Missouri is working with bacteria that can render toxic radioactive metals inert. But, you know, if we're looking at the biological transmutation route, that's incredibly controversial because, you know, the scientists don't admit that that happens in biological species
yet. You have to also understand the scientists don't believe you can remediate radiation, period. And I think that was probably some of the problem I had when I first introduced this way back in 2011 when this problem first happened.
I guess what I'm saying, Dennis, is I guess I should talk to Dr. Wall to have her on a future program to discuss, because if she's actually working with these little guys and she believes that certain species can actually remediate radioactive wastes, that's a really important breakthrough.
A gigantic breakthrough. But like I said, we believe we have access, and I have another person that has the patent on this process, okay. And we want to utilize.
Is that Marty
and
Miller?
Culture them. Yeah.
Marty Miller.
Millar.
Mm-hmm. Millar. Okay, Millar. Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Marty Millar. He has access to these, and he can culture these guys, and we can use them in all manner of solutions for healing the environment.
So again,
if we have polluted water, we have metals, we have lead, we have mercury. All those things can be remediated with these kinds of technologies.
And so why don't we know about this? Hold it there. Don't answer. It's a rhetorical question. My guest this morning is engineer Dennis Watts. We're discussing nuclear radiation remediation. Remediation. I'll get that right at this time of the morning. It's almost the top of the hour. You're on the other side of midnight. When we come back, we're going to talk about more of Dennis's specific plan, because apparently there are bacteria that someone is working with that actually can remediate nuclear radiation, biological transmutation in a jar. Amazing. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. Other side of midnight. Welcome back, everybody. It's a little chilly in the Land of Enchantment tonight. If I look over at the big thermometer outside my window, it is in the upper 20s, but at least we don't have new snow. We have ancient snow sitting on the mountains, gorgeous under moonlight tonight, but no snow on the driveway. Dennis, tell us more about Marty Millar and his patent, because again, all this stuff seems to be out there, but no one's assembling it, except that's what your project wants to do, to actually confront this issue, confront this problem.
Absolutely. And like I said, this has been around for a long time. One of the first persons that made a discovery of this type of remediating bacteria, if you want to call it, I like to call them nanomicrobes, because I think they are totally different than normal bacteria, to tell you the honest truth. They call them bacteria because they probably don't know what else to call them. Mm-hmm. But I think they're as different from bacteria as we are from gorillas and chimpanzees. And they have a whole different function. And I also believe that these beings are very intelligent, and they are, let's say, very conscious and aware of their surroundings and what they want to accomplish. The programs that are locked into their particular being is, you know, for supporting creation to the fullest extent. And I think God put them here for managing and controlling and perfecting creation. And I think they were here probably before bacteria, probably here before even fungi got on the planet. And they set and laid the foundation so that the rest of creation could grow. And I believe this is what we want to use as one of our solution sets in order to get this huge problem resolved. And the reason I think they will be extremely helpful is because of their ability to multiply themselves geometrically and exponentially through a process called binary fission.
Sure. And that's what microbes do.
That's what is so unique about them. And they will not overtake the environment. Once they are complete, they just go dormant and become part of the surroundings of the earth, whether it's in the water, in ice, in soil, or if it's in high temperatures or low temperatures. And I believe they also have the ability to survive in lava flows. In other words, that doesn't even destroy them. They, for all intent and purpose, appear to be immortal.
How in the world could the little fragile bacterium exist in, you know, 2,500, 3,000 degree lava? It just seems kind of impossible. They would just incinerate.
Well, it appears, that's what you would think. But it appears they have the ability to be immortal.
Unless they're really, 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 really good at firewalking. Anyway, so let's go back to Marty Millar, because I know that bacteria can be used to remediate oil spills. Back during the Gulf of Mexico crisis, huge
that's
oil spill.
One of their many skills.
Okay, but that's just a chemical reaction. If you're going to use biologicals, bacteria, to remediate nuclear materials, radioactive materials, you just can't have all the bacteria eating all the radioactive material, because then what do? You know, remember that old joke about Star Trek? What happens when you feed a tribble an unlimited amount? You get lots of fat tribbles. Well, you get lots of fat bacteria full of radioactivity, which has not changed anything. So these bacteria have got to change the radioactivity. They have to be able to transmute it internally, biologically, which is impossible by all that current science thinks they know, even though we have papers from people.
And that is the operative word, okay, my friend.
So
all they think they know.
Now, what has Marty Millar shown you that tells you that his bacteria are special and they can do what he claims they can do?
Now, see, you're looking at it from the standpoint of them going and chomping on some metal and chewing on it and then pooping out something
No. I'm talking about, you basically have a radioactive problem like Chernobyl or Fukushima.
Right.
You take these bacteria, you dump them in there, and the idea is, okay, guys, now go and have lunch, but don't bring your lunch out to us. Remediate it, transmute it, so when we come and pick you up, you're just nice, normal little bacteria that are munching on an extra amount of ion or niacin or some non-radioactive element, and then we'll just dump you in the ocean, we'll bury you in a landfill, and you'll wait there until we need you the next time. How do we know that Marty Millar has got those specific kind of transmuting bacteria? What test results have you seen? That's what I'm asking.
Now, I have only seen or heard them discuss what they have done in the field in other areas where they have tested these particular species. I have not personally seen them actually do this because I haven't been around radioactive waste myself. All I'm doing now, like I said, is collecting this information and going with what they have already experienced. Now, this is what their patent says they're capable of handling this kind of situation. And what they're doing, in essence, if I understand it correctly, is they are consuming the energy. Everything in the universe is energy, and it is highly compressed energy or light of creation. And by the organization and all the elements on the periodic table is nothing more than different vibrations of energy.
Dennis, wait a minute. Are we talking about nuclear-powered bacteria? Do we really want this?
Powered.
I mean, I can think of several sci-fi movies that would be that this could create instantly. Nuclear-powered bacteria. Yeah, right. Yeah, Spider-Man has a new problem.
These are not, I would say, nuclear powered. It's just that their particular gift is, most of the time we look at life as being DNA based.
Right.
These are RNA based.
Yeah, but again, that's only chemistry. That's not, you know,
yes.
How do they interact with
yes,
nuclear
they
stuff?
Are okay.
Okay. So let me back up and get a big view. You have a couple of people, Dr. Wall and then this guy Marty Millar, who you believe may have in the form of specific strains of bacteria that can consume and transmute radioactive waste. You think you have two possible solutions for the remediation. Okay, let's continue down the list.
What's, I have a third.
What's the third?
And the third is something called a Johnny tube. This was designed by a guy named John and Nancy Hutchison out of Oregon. They used to be in Canada, but now they've got a setup in Oregon.
Yeah, John's the EM guy. You're like the magnetic radiation guy. Okay, yeah, I know John.
Yes, well, I'm in touch with them and talking to them, and they're willing to share their technology, and he has developed something called a Johnny tube. Now, what the Johnny tube basically does is it creates a hydrogen-based frequency, and this hydrogen-based frequency, when they put it into an area that is got a lot of background radiation, it knocks it down within 20 minutes.
Mm.
And this technology, he has also developed a self-charging battery. So that means this technology does not have to be near a power grid. It creates its own energy because he has a self-charging battery that runs this particular unit. And he has had great success up in that area of keeping the background radiation just at the right levels where you just have your normal background cosmic radiation that comes through.
So John's approach is a technological machine but that exposes the radioactive materials, whatever the isotopes are, to a certain frequency spread of electromagnetic radiation.
Mm-hmm. In the frequency of hydrogen.
In this thing called a Johnny tube.
Yes.
And when he opens it up, the radiation is gone.
Right. That is what's going on. Now, what he is able to do is...
Do we have numbers on this? Dennis, do we have any numbers on this?
Numbers such as...
Radiation goes in, no radiation comes out, what your results are, how easy it is to get the samples, how much stuff it could be scaled... Because remember, Fukushima's got a huge... I mean, look at your document. You've got bales and bales and bales with photographs showing these stacked bales of radioactive waste at a temporary storage site called Tomoka near the Fukushima prefecture, and it's just staggering what they have to remediate or bury or do something with.
Absolutely, and this is where we want to find the... Well, we have to also take into consideration what you're seeing is just what was nice and neatly stacked up.
Sorry to interrupt again, but I can see how the bacteria could be scaled. Because tonight we're going to try to talk about real solutions, not just pie in the sky. But how could you scale John's process, given that it's one little gadget?
Let me explain
how it works. You have to do it on an industrial level. Yes, by all means.
Let me explain how it works again.
Okay.
Now, like I said, this is self-contained, and... What he has designed it such that the power source is self-charging. So I don't have to tie it to a grid. So this technology can be attached to a tree, and the tree will act as an antenna. And it can broadcast the frequency, and they have clocked this frequency being effective up to 75 miles away. That's how far they have measured it. It can be even further. That's how far they have measured it.
You're talking about something which doesn't take samples inside a small container. It broadcasts some kind of wave over a very large radius and affects radioactive nuclei within that huge radius you said out to 75 miles.
That's what they've measured it.
Okay,
but it can probably go further.
So this is akin to radionics.
Yes. Psychotronics, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they are being very effective, and they are setting up grids across the United States to try to bring this high levels of background radiation down. Now, what inspired them? They lost a grandchild to this background radiation being too high. And so they definitely see the importance, and their heart has been broken by this already because of the infant mortality rate is spiking on the West Coast significantly. And they are one of the victims of that. One of their grandchildren lost their life because of that. So that's
now,
why
Dennis, even though those background levels are high, they're not high enough to be what doctors would term life-threatening. If that was true, you'd have emergency rooms from Oregon all the way to the Baja filled with screaming parents with kids that were dying, given those levels of radiation that you report.
I'm just saying you, the rate is up 41% so far, and that's a lot of misery and despair. Cancer in Japan right now is up above 30%. That's an enormous amount of despair.
Yeah, but Japan is not the west coast of the United States, the west coast of California. In other words, being in Japan, being around Fukushima, yeah, incredibly bad to be there. But being thousands of miles away with all the dilution between there and here, that's why I want some kind of sanity to where we do look at these numbers, because you can scare people to death with numbers that, yeah, they're elevated, but are they elevated to where they're dangerous? And you're saying that John's daughter or your granddaughter died?
Grandchild
died because of radiation. I find
that's
that
what they told me, yes.
Well, see, again, you have to check your sources. Mm-hmm. Who told them that? What doctor told them? Because that is major news. You know, you can't kill kids with radiation unless it's lethal to where an awful lot of people would be dying.
Yes,
or unless they got a particle of.
You're talking about toddlers and small babies because they are growing at a very rapid rate, and they don't need a lot of radiation in order to disrupt that function. It's just now you don't need a lot. And that's what's going on, but that's happening all across the United States, and it happened a lot whenever it first happened back in 2011. And we had the iodine 131, and all the way over in Pennsylvania, that iodine 131 was getting into their water supply, and it was causing major problems.
Okay,
but
so, all
right. Yeah, you're right. It did not get into the news to that extent.
And
I would
again,
agree.
It's not in social media, which I'm really surprised about, given how ornery people are, and they now have the ability to talk to anybody anywhere in the world. You'd think these kinds of readings would be making the rounds, like, look at this, I'm moving to Poughkeepsie, I'm moving to, you know, South America, I'm going to get out of the, you know, the northern hemisphere, because this radiation will circle the world, you know, for a long time, as long as things are happening at Fukushima. So let's get back to remediation. You've got three techniques. Two are biological, two are based on organisms, microbes. And the third one is something that John has created, which is an electronic device that he believes can project a field out to, you know, 75, 100 miles, whatever, and can neutralize the radioactive isotopes within that radius through a field mechanism.
Yes.
Again, does John have data? Does he have actual numbers? Can he show before, during, and after?
Yes, and that's what he's been doing over the last
few months. Can we find them?
On his website.
Okay.
That is liferay.org.
Hang on. If you could take this down and post it over so we can actually get it up on the website, because I'd like to have people be able to have access to data. I mean, when you're making an extraordinary claim, Dennis, that you can remediate radioactivity, which is kind of like the holy grail of physics,
you
need to really document and support that claim. Otherwise, you get people's hopes up for nothing.
I get you, and I understand. Because this technology was offered to the Department of Energy some years ago when we first were working with it.
Okay, and you have to do the website one more time slowly.
Oh, that is liferay.org.
And we're getting noise on your Skype, so you might spell it.
Life, LIFE-ray, RAY, .org.
Okay, and when we click on that, what do we see?
Well, he has a few, I guess you could say, YouTubes, where they're actually measuring his results, and you can see how he built his gigantic machine.
Okay.
I call it a ray gun. And he was basically showing how he was going through and building that technology for the purpose of remediation, but he also showed what he was measuring with a Geiger counter, what it was before and what it was after they turned on the technology. Okay. And he's talking about his measurements. But that's all in a YouTube, and I don't know if I could just go and find that right now because I wasn't planning to go into it in that greater depth at this moment. But the fact of the matter is he does have information there that everybody needs to be aware of so that we can share this technology on a grander scale so that everybody can hopefully get access to it and we can start to resolve and solve these problems, because I believe the Chernobyl problem is going to also need this technology so that it can be remediated as well. Okay. Because I believe their concrete dome, due to the Wigner effect, is going to need to be renewed in some way, shape, or form. And this kind of technology should be helpful in restoring that area. And then we want to just go around and clean up all of the radioactivity that is stored deep in the earth, because that's going to sooner or later get out and bump into somebody and cause their life to be turned sideways as well.
You're talking about Hanford.
Ongoing.
Yeah, you're talking about Hanford and the radioactive materials in the southwestern deserts in Missouri, mm-hmm. in Nevada,
and
et cetera.
New Mexico, yep. And a lot of the waste dumps that have been put together over the years from the nuclear weapons testing and things of that sort, they need to be cleaned up and remediated, and this technology need to be brought forward in order to clean that up, because that is getting out into the environment and causing problems with people's health. That is, in my opinion, I'm just saying this is an opinion, that's one of the reasons why you get things like type 2 diabetes, other upper respiratory diseases, and lung cancers that you shouldn't be getting, because I never smoked and I didn't do this and I eat organic food, but yet they still get it anyway. It's because they've probably got a radioactive field. Now, people who travel in the airplane, because this radiation is high up in the atmosphere as well, and if you go on travel and come back from travel and find out you have something that feels like a flu or a cold, and you got it for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, that's probably you picked up some radioactive particulates and your body is trying its best to get rid of them. Because I've seen a few friends who travel a lot, like to Africa and things of that sort, and they come back and they have to go to the hospital because they can't breathe or they're having upper respiratory illness. Most likely they have run through some radioactive clouds.
Do you remember, Dennis, a few years ago, I mean, it's more like, 30 years ago, when we used to, have the Soviet Union and we were in loggerheads and we had 50,000 nuclear warheads poised, et cetera, on launch pads and all that. Remember the Cold War?
Yeah.
Okay. Remember when we built a new embassy in downtown Moscow and the Russians implanted all kinds of microwave bugging devices?
Yeah, I remember that too.
And in fact, they did more than that. They used their microwave knowledge to actually irradiate members of the ambassador's staff, and there were several deaths due to strange radiation effects, not nuclear, but electromagnetic radiation effects, even though the thresholds, according to the Russians, are much lower as standards there than they are here. So are you saying that the nuclear power standards for ionizing radiation, biologically significant radiation, radiation doses, how much you have to be exposed to basically get killed outright, how much you can be exposed to have potential probabilities of cancer over 20, 30, 40 years, that all those numbers are basically way too low, and that the measurements of the radiation...
Way too high.
You mean they're set way too high? Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, for instance, when you were looking at the numbers for Spokane and it was like 1585, and we're saying the normal background is somewhere between 5 counts to maybe 20 counts per minute,
right,
and we're at the 318 times normal, 300 counts per minute you should be evacuating.
One would normally think.
Yeah,
so why isn't any of this happening? Dennis, this is why I'm
evacuated.
Dennis, this is why I'm so kind of incredulous, because either those numbers are coming from a cooked source or we're already cooked and no one has let us know, because those numbers are not trivial and they should be the occasion of headlines in every major city in America with numbers like that.
Thank you for allowing this to be put on your radio station so people can become aware. Thank you. And I thank
you. Well, having it all down and in graphic form and having good sourcing is really important, because when you're making an extremely controversial claim, you have to be able to back it up.
Yes. I mean, these are the measurements that people are making because we're not getting it from the normal official source, but people are still aware and taking measurements and putting them up. And I'm one of those types that are an intense researcher. I collect that data, organize it, and try to present it the best way I possibly can.
Right after the Fukushima event, there was a blogger here in the States. I forget. He had a very strange name. And he basically traveled from one coast to the other making radiation measurements and putting them on the website. Mm-hmm. And the radiation measurements did not match these at all. And he literally went across the entire country. He got some somewhat elevated readings. I think this was in the summer of 2011. And then he got lower readings, I think, in that fall. And I haven't kept track of what his name was. And I wish I could remember his name, because it was a very unusual name.
Dana Dunford.
No, it wasn't.
That sound familiar?
No, it wasn't him.
Okay.
It was Iron something, or someone will tell me.
Remember.
Yeah, someone will tell me. Okay. He was a major player on the web in terms of radiation from Fukushima for a while. And when I got ratings from him that seemed to be within norm, I became less concerned. I mean, the readings you're presenting us tonight with are definitely alarming. So how do we get backup?
I mean,
how do we get confirmation?
If you look at page 29 of the proposal, and you look at this salmon.
Okay, let me go to
back in August.
Hang on. Let me go to 29.
Page 29.
Going to 29, okay. All right. Skimming down to 29. Got it.
And if you look at that fish, you'll see that it has all these cancer tumors in and around its mouth. Now, back in August of last year, they were counting somewhere close to 1 million salmon in the Pacific Northwest were in the process, they were dead or in the process of dying. That means something was going on, and they were saying, oh, it must be some kind of weird bacteria. And I'm saying, are you kidding me? And as a result, they are really suffering from the ocean being too polluted with radioactivity. Now, if you go down and look at a picture on page 31, you'll see where they cut a salmon open, and you can see its body is full of little cancers.
Oh, my God. Look at that.
Okay? That's what was going on. And if you go down...
This is as of June 2015.
Yeah.
Now, do we know where this salmon was caught?
Most likely in the Pacific Northwest.
But we don't know for sure.
That's where they were having a major... Up and around Oregon, because I remember I have a friend that lives up there was talking about had like 38,000 pounds of salmon, and when they took them to the butcher to prepare them for market, they ended up with only 8,000 pounds that they could actually use. The rest was thrown away because it was so full of radioactive cancerous tumors that they were trying to cut away. So the guy said that drove him said that was basically a hazmat truck that I was driving, a hazardous material truck. And that's what they are trying to still make money off of this. And I'm saying, you kidding me? That is sickening to think about.
Again, where's the EPA?
And if you look at
And the FDA. Why are we paying for two major agencies to keep us safe? And they're obviously, if this imagery is to be believed, they're not keeping us safe.
No, they're not. And that's why we need to be aware so that we can protect ourselves. That's where I'm coming from. That's what this whole thing is about. We need to be aware that we need to take care of ourselves. They are not doing it anymore for some odd reason. If you look at page 33, you'll see a great white shark. This picture was taken down in Australia. And I thought, I've heard many times, oh, sharks can't get cancer. Well, what in the world is that hanging off the end of this shark's mouth? Mm. And this was taken by people down in Australia. And I'm saying, wow, that's a historic verse.
Dennis, and, hold it there. Hold it there. We're at the bottom. No, yeah, we are at the bottom of the hour. This is very disturbing. This is very disturbing indeed. So the question is, what are we going to do about it?
Right? Well, we got solutions. We just got to get them implemented. Okay. And we got to do it in a hurry.
Yes, we do. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is Dennis Watts. We're discussing Fukushima and obvious evidence of some kind of massive radiation damage to salmon and to sharks and who knows what other life forms in the food chain in the Pacific Ocean. Is it possible that the radiation leakage from Fukushima is so much more than they've even dared to tell us about? Think about that. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We shall return. And we are back in our last half hour this morning with my guest, Dennis Watts. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 505-796-8802. If you live on the West Coast and you're eating something from the Pacific Ocean, it might be useful for you to call 505-796-8802 or our Skype handle, Enterprise Mission. Dennis, why don't you take us beyond page 33? Because I'm looking at some of these examples. This is staggering that we're not seeing this in the mainstream news.
Yes, I would agree. If we were to go to page 34, and you would see what would normally be called a starfish, and starfish normally have 5 legs, here is one with 18 legs.
Oh my
and
God.
I'm thinking, that's not right. That's messed up. And I'm thinking, you know, this process has begun where we have an extinction level event going on in our Pacific Ocean as we speak. Now, I know the way they were thinking, the scientists were thinking, is that dilution is the solution to pollution. And I'm just saying the evidence is proving them to be completely wrong with that idea. I know the gigantic Pacific Ocean is vast, but with dumping 300 tons of radioactive waste into the ocean on a daily basis over years, it's going to have an impact because the ocean is intelligent, no question about it. The ocean can remediate radiation, but if I'm constantly assaulting it, it has no time to recharge and to bring up the minerals needed and necessary in order to eliminate and neutralize and remediate the radiation. So if I'm constantly assaulting you, you're going to get wore out. And that's what I believe has happened. The ocean is unable to recuperate with such a large assault on it on a daily basis. And this is what we are ending up with. And most people are saying, well, it must be some weird bacteria out there. And I'm saying, no, this is not a weird bacteria. This is
no bacteria. All right, let me ask you this then. If we have a natural background of nuclear, you know, remediating bacteria in our environment, if in fact, as you stated, what, an hour or so ago, they may have been one of the first life forms because they conditioned the environment so that life could survive in a radioactive environment because the early Earth was not as benign as it is now. Lots of radiation back then, incredible, fierce radiation, and yet life survived and was able to create all the various families and species that we see now with a lot of extinction in between. So what happened to the good bacteria that are supposed to be protecting us from radiation by transmuting it?
I still believe it's out there. I just believe it's under such a strong assault. It needs assistance.
So you think it's been overwhelmed?
That, it's overwhelmed.
Okay.
That's what I believe is going on. If you look at page 35 and you look at the seal, you can see his face has been burned. And that's because it has been overwhelmed.
But that requires a huge amount of radiation.
Yeah.
Not background. I mean, where would a seal get exposed to that huge? I mean, that's thousands of curies. You know, per what, hour, per minute?
Yeah, well, if you got 300 tons of water moving into the ocean, and that's just a small estimate, That's not the actual. That's the numbers that they are publishing right now.
Right.
It's probably way more than that.
Right.
Way more. But the bottom line is, it's not diluting.
So you're basically saying to the entire infrastructure, the official infrastructure to guard our health, both here and in, from the government of Japan, is not only falling down the job, but they're lying to us. They're outright lying to us. If you look at these are images which are suffering from radiation exposure.
Yes.
Large amounts of radiation exposure. And so somebody's got to really be totally thinking we're out to lunch and we're never going to ask where it's coming from.
Yeah, that's their hope, I guess. And the longer we don't ask the question, the longer we don't implement any solutions.
So how do we get a network put together of honest people going to Radio Shack and buying, you know, gadgets for sensing radiation, if not Radio Shack, some other equivalent, you know, Amazon or whatever, mm-hmm. and basically creating an independent democratic network that gives us the truth so we know what we need to do?
Well, like I said, that is part of what having your show to give us a platform to discuss this, to have this discussion, that's the first step. I believe the people are intelligent enough to do something once they have an idea that it's necessary to do so. I was under the impression that the FDA, the AMA, the EPA were out there to protect and make sure the environment was sound and safe for every man, woman, and child. Obviously, that's not the case. And they're making excuses. Well, the rad net had to be turned off because cell towers were interfering with our signal.
That
and
makes,
we don't
that
have
is
a
so
solution.
Nuts. That is so stupidly nuts.
Yes,
that makes no sense at all. That is such an outright lie. And who's buying it? What engineers are
yes,
buying that
is.
Lie?
I'm in total agreement with you. I'm not buying it. Obviously,
so
I'm
where
not
do we put the
it.
Political pressure? We've only got a few minutes left. You know, I need people to call so you can tell them what they can do, because obviously sitting here for 2 hours and saying we basically are screwed is not a very useful function. So what can we do? What can we do locally, Dennis? What, for instance, with nuclear remediation, let's say that I go out and I buy a can of salmon. I like salmon. I like salmon on crackers. I like salmon in salads. I like salmon. Okay. How can I remediate that can of salmon in my kitchen? Is there a technology in your
cool kit? I don't think you're
going
to be able to do that. That would not be a wise thing to do. If you find that that's radioactive, it needs to be thrown away and destroyed as soon as possible out of your house.
Okay.
I heard that there was a guy up right now up in San Francisco. They cannot consume Dungeness crabs. They put that out all the way up to Alaska. You should not eat any crabs. Now, their excuse for you not being able to go is because of something called Dominic acid. And I say, what the hell is Dominic acid?
Which is far apart from nuclear as you can get.
Yeah, but the bottom line, the crabs are radioactive.
What?
That's why
you should not
consume them. The Wait. Crabs are radioactive.
Okay.
That's the problem. But
again, Dennis, who has sampled them? Who has published this report? Where can we find it? This is a game where you've got to follow the protocols of the numbers, the papers,
yes,
the references.
I get you. I understand. But that is hard to come by in this environment because nobody wants to take measurements and put that stuff out.
Hang on. That's not true. And I know people will kill me when I interrupt, but I've got to interrupt because if we keep going on, we won't get back to the point that needs to be clarified, which is... Mm-hmm. I have friends in the Northeast, Pacific Northeast, who love to go on the salmon runs. And I've been asking them every single year about the radiation measurements, the Coast Guard stations are measuring your radiation. These are fishermen. These are pro fishermen. These are sport fishermen. Their livelihood depends on those salmon not being filled with radiation. They've been reporting to me no problems at all. And you're showing me pictures showing salmon, obviously, you know, with deadly amounts
with
of radiation.
Problems. Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
What? Where is that disconnect coming from? What are your sources? See, that's what I'm asking. What are your sources?
My sources are looking at and studying what people are experiencing as they are out in the field, out in the ocean, taking pictures and actually trying to bring some of this to market and what they're discovering. That's where I'm getting this information. And I'm looking at it from social media sites all across the internet, and I'm monitoring the whole planet for information and mining the planet and data mining the internet for information with regards to all of this. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, polar bears, their hair is falling out, they're having challenges. The other animals, all the way down to the shrimp and the crabs, right here in the Orange County area, thousands and thousands of crabs are climbing out of the water and dying. And nobody's talking about it. They had pictures of it in the magazine, but that's all they just said. They didn't have a reason why they were coming out of the water dying. Now, what was really weird to me is even seaweed is disconnecting and coming up on the beach, too. Now, I'm saying, are you telling me seaweed can't even stand to be in the radiation either? So that's what's going on. The water and the amount of radiation in the upper atmosphere and in our ocean is just too high to support life. My main concern is the phytoplankton. The first 30 feet of the ocean contains the phytoplankton, which is the largest biomass on the planet that produces close to 80% of the oxygen we breathe on this planet. Trees produce the other 20%. And if they get disrupted, what's going to happen to their ability to produce oxygen? That's my concern. So we've got to put together and implement our solution set so that we can normalize this environment as soon as possible. That's all I need to say. And I'm hoping I can get support by people going to the website. Please sign our petition so that we can get 1 million names to put on the desk at the White House, at the UN Security Council, at the Japanese government and their parliament, so that they can understand we need their support so that we can start implementing our engineering solutions.
Okay, you need to give out the website again.
It's wtsenates.info/nexus. And just click on Fukushima button, and you'll see a petition, and you'll also see a donate button. If you can donate $1, $5, $1 billion, $1 trillion, it will be most appreciated, because that's how big this challenge is, and we need to get on the J-O-B ASAP so that we can remediate this. Now, my motivation for getting into this, because I'm not getting paid right now, I did all this work out of the kindness and generosity of my heart because it's important, but really because I got grandbabies. And my grandbabies, I don't want them growing up in a world like this where I got an apocalyptic zombie civilization because everybody's falling apart due to overt cancers being, you know, coming out of their body. And that is not a future I want for my children or grandchildren or anybody else's grandchildren.
Okay, so let's talk practically about what can be done. Are you aware that the White House has something called the White House petition process?
Yes, I'm aware of it. That's why we want you to sign our petition so that we can get it into them.
Okay,
and
well,
let them know.
You can launch a petition without people. You just set it up. You go through some protocols of the White House website, and you basically set up a petition. Now, depending upon the number of signatures that you get, and I think the threshold now is something like 25,000. I think that, you know, it may be an old number. It used to be 5,000, and they, you know, easily achieved that, and they went up to 10 and then 20 or 25, you know.
I think it's 100,000 now.
It may be 100. The point is, if you insert this with a very catchy title and descriptive material so people understand what's going on, and maybe, I don't know whether you can put images on a petition or not, probably not. But if you could show people some of these images, because these are horrific images of wildlife in the Pacific that apparently are suffering from major radiation.
Right. All I'm saying is all of that is on the website. And the petitions, there's a big button, sign the petition. There's a donate button. And there's all of this information. The executive summary is there to show you what our overall process and planning process. You'll see the five phases of the program. Because we're not only just solving that, we're also setting up clinics so that we can prepare for triage. And we want to set up these clinics for Japan as well as all the West Coast and across the United States and other places.
So wait a minute. When you say triage, Dennis, you mean it's going to get a lot worse? People are going to start dying visibly?
Well, people are going to be getting ill. People are going to be getting cancers. Like in Japan, it's over 30% increase in thyroid cancer.
Now, again, do we have a document on that? Do we have a reference? Do we have a link?
Yes. We have people that, well, I don't know what it is because I just read the article and I saw the information myself. And it came from a high-level person out of Japan that had collected that data. But if you were to look at some of the, I can probably get that to you because I can find it again.
Yeah, I would like to put that together with your show tonight for the archive for Club 19.5. Which, and again, if you miss technical material, that's the advantage of being a member of Club 19.5. Mm-hmm. You can listen again and again and play it back and slow it down until we get it right. Okay.
Well, let me tell you this, too, because this is important, because we have technology or access to technology that can remediate radiation poison out of the body. And Dr. Sandra Rose Michael has put together something called an EE system, an energy enhancement system, that creates a bioscalar torsion field that a person can sit in, and it cleans and raises the voltage on every cell in the body to somewhere between 70 to 90 millivolts. When the voltage is at that optimum level, the intelligence of that cell is increased tremendously, and it can solve all kinds of problems. And she has been able to help, you know, veterans that have been poisoned by depleted uranium.
Oh,
that
my
had
gosh.
Stage 4 cancers. And
holy
she's been
cow.
Able to
obviously, we need to get her
that
hold
out of them.
Yeah, we need to get hold of her. So give out her name again. And I'll have Em try to get hold of her so that we can have her as a guest. Because if she's working with vets that have been working with depleted uranium shells, that's a really important problem.
Yes, it is. And she has this a beautiful solution set. And we want to set up her technology in these clinics so that people can come there for relief from all of the radiation if they have been exposed to it. And this is going to help people with the thyroid cancers. We can clean that. And we can treat hundreds of people at one time with this technology. All
well,
we do is just set it up in a auditorium or a gymnasium, set up some chairs, and just let them relax for an hour or two, three times a week, and it will help with the remediation process.
Can you describe how her technology works?
Yes. In other words, she has these digital panels. And they have to be laser aligned, and they will transmit energy. And where they collide, they create a zero-point field.
Wait, Dennis, I'm not seeing anything at all. Describe from the ground up. What is she building? What do you do? Do you get into it? Do you sit in it? Do you wear it?
No, you sit in it. You sit in a field that's being generated.
So this is a room and a chair in a room.
Yes.
With technology around.
Yes.
It.
Yes, that's
and
how
the,
it works.
And the technology does what?
And the technology raises the cellular voltage to the optimum levels. And that optimum level is somewhere between 70 and 90 millivolts. And when that voltage level, that potential on each cell is raised, I'm just saying the IQ, the intelligent quotient of that cell, is increased tremendously.
This is your
and
term.
The body's intelligence can now solve whatever problem is present within and around that cell. And that means cleaning out toxins, restoring, removing radiation. All those things can be resolved.
I've got to see the papers and results on this. This is really cool. Now, we're basically down to the last few minutes of the show. I want you, everyone, to go back to othersideofmidnight.com. That includes you, Dennis. Go to Radio with Pictures, upper right-hand corner. That takes you to tonight's guest page, Dennis's page. Item number 2, link number 2 at the top of the page, where it says transcript of ABC TV Good Morning America program on cold fusion excess energy and radioactive reduction. Dennis, are you aware of this amazing live Good Morning America experiment back in 1997?
No, I am not, I have to say.
Okay, well, let me take
not
you through
familiar
it.
With that.
Let me take you through it. It was done by an engineer named James Patterson, who had created a device that was basically pursuing the cold fusion option, which is you put, you know, a bunch of glass beads coated with niobium in a container. You put them in heavy water with deuterium. You put an electrical current through them, and Patterson was able to get more energy out than he was putting in. Standard cold fusion protocol. One of the side effects that blew his mind and blew the mind of everybody who looked at it, Charlie Gibson, who was the announcer on ABC that morning, Dr. Michael Gillian, who interviewed me when I did Good Morning America many years ago. He was the science advisor to ABC at the time. My friend Gene Maloff, who ran Infinite Energy Magazine, who actually arranged for the demo. The side effect was when Patterson plugged his cold fusion gadget in with all the little beads and brought it near a radioactive source, I think he was using uranium-235, he was able to remediate, that is, diminish by, I think, a factor of 2, the radiation in the uranium, by a factor of 2 in about 20 minutes. And normally, to diminish the radiation by a factor of 2, a half-life, takes 4.5 billion years. So this is a technology that was demonstrated live on Good Morning America to solve the preeminent physics-slash-energy problem of our time, which is to how to basically cancel nuclear radiation, to make it safe, to get rid of it, to cancel it, to increase it to the point where it no longer is radioactive, to diminish its half-life, to eliminate it from the environment. That was in 1997, and you're telling me right now on this morning that you've never heard about this demo.
Not that demo. No,
amazing.
I haven't. But like
again, amazing.
I asked,
but Dennis, that makes my point.
I think
where is it today? Well, Patterson died, and his heirs and successors have not developed the technology. It's only one of many technologies. But the reason I put it up on the website tonight with the link is because it was on Good Morning America. It was on ABC News. Mm-hmm. It was on a TV show that had tens of millions of listeners and viewers, and you didn't see it because there's a suppression, apparently, of this kind of technology. Someone apparently wants us to live in a radioactive cesspool. Otherwise, you could buy this at Kmart.
Yep, you are understanding the situation we're going through. That's why it has to happen from our level, and I'm calling the grassroots level. And we have to become aware and then tell the people at the so-called the authorities that we want a solution and we want it now. And if we talk about it, they cannot ignore us. The only reason they are keeping the information from us is so we can't talk about it. As long as you don't think there is a problem, you won't discuss it. But we are. And thank you again for allowing me to have this platform. Thank you so very much.
Sorry, Dennis. Sorry, I keep doing that. I shouldn't do that. But when I get excited, a friend of ours, Greg Ahrens, just sent me the link to Dutch Sinise. That was the guy who traveled coast to coast. He has a website, http://DutchSinise.com, DutchSinise.com. And that will take you to his website. He did the radiation measurements in 2011. And again, it would be useful to compare those measurements with the ones in your document. They're linked at number one under your section tonight on Radio with Pictures.
Right. I would love to do that because I'm looking for and collecting all manner of technologies to relieve and to remediate all kinds of environmental problems, not just radiation. We're talking about polluted water systems like what they're experiencing in Michigan, where we can remediate mercury, lead, cadmium, arsenic, where we can clean large bodies of water, clean large areas of the air and the atmosphere. of radiation and other contaminants that might be there. All of those will be part of what the Nexus Environmental Corporation is going to attempt to bring all the necessary minds together so that we can solve these challenges and make our Earth pristine. When our Earth is pristine, believe me, it's going to support us on a higher level as far as our health and vitality. And that's what I've discovered. If the Earth is radiating a healthy energy field, it's going to feed all of life on the Earth, all the fish, all the birds, all the bees, all the trees, and well as us humans. And that is what we want to accomplish. That is our goal. And that is something we believe is possible because we have no problem with the genius of humanity. We do have a problem with the liquidity to allow our resources to go forward. That's the challenge. And we do have a challenge with people that have other, I guess you could say, interests that might be opposing where they want to go. And if they have the power, they will find ways to suppress it. And that's kind of like what we're experiencing right now. There's no reason this technology should be suppressed as we speak. We've already demonstrated it over in Fukushima in the Kawamata labs that this technology worked. Now, let me explain one little tiny thing before we
go. And we've only got about a minute.
We have another technology by Arnold Scientific Lab called AST Compound. This AST Compound is another very special mineral blend that boils water. But it boils water without creating radioactive byproducts. And we can use this in the existing nuclear power plants without changing their design and stop using these poisonous fuel rods that are generating all this radioactivity. And sooner or later, we're not going to have places to put this stuff. Right now, that's the main problem that's happening at Fukushima. They have all these tanks that they've built over the last few years trying to store their radioactive waste. And these things are hurriedly put together. They are put together with bolts and rubber seals. And all that stuff is going to just break and come apart in short order. They're not going to be able to last over 5 years. And what are they going to do with all this water? Yeah. They've got to find a way to remediate.
Dennis, we have literally seconds left. Give people an address where they can reach you.
Well, like, go to the website, and everything is there. And that's wtsenate.info/nexus. And please sign our petition, and please donate. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. My guest this morning has been Dennis Watts, engineer into nuclear remediation, looking at Fukushima and collateral damage all over the world. So until tomorrow morning, where it's open hailing frequencies, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.